We shall be seeking violence, dear listeners, on
it's
this Friday,
ladies and gentlemen. If you think you have made a terrible decision this week, just want to remind you that someone got into trouble after, you know, knocking at someone's gate and telling them they are a, you know, interlock specialist.
What? Who did that? Who's an interlock?
No, they failed, you know, low budget transporter movie in Rocky Crest, according to.
Yeah, you set a new record, Abud. Within the first minute, not even the first minute, now within the first minute.
I came across one video reporting on that case from one of the media houses here in Namibia, where the lady pointed out that according to reports of the residents of the area, one resident was, had this guy basically knock at their gate. And when they, you know, when he or she asked them, you know, the low budget transporter guys, what they were looking for, they were said, well, according to the story, they said they were interlock specialists. I was like, interlock specialist?
Mm.
Interlock specialist. Not only are you guys terrible at driving, but you're also terrible at lying because they overturned with their getaway car.
Hey, man. It was probably someone's first time driving a car.
With a health passport, most probably.
Probably.
Yeah, you know.
Or with a voter's card.
Look, the thing is, now they're making it very difficult for those of us that are planning on going to NATIS because, you know, now we use it as an example. You know, you don't want to be like that guy that you've overturned in Nissan. No, you know, we want you to pass so you can be. Of course, not to be an excellent getaway driver, you know, just to be an excellent, productive, well, basically productive member of society.
Mm.
Yeah. But today we're here to talk about something different, not that. Today we're talking about procurement.
Well, in a sense, you know, procurement was also participating in that, you know, in that Ochumise version of transporter. Because they were obviously trying to procure something. But procurement obviously means you are buying or you are receiving money.
You'll be excommunicated from traveling to Rocky Crest.
Because I said Ochumise.
Uh-huh.
Look, same neighborhood, same WhatsApp group. I'm sorry if you're in Rocky Crest. But you know what? You guys are neighbors. You're right next to each other. So I'm sorry. But yeah, let's,
now that you put it that way, it sort of like, it reminds me of a hike.
You can drive out from Rocky Crest into Ochumise. So they are neighbors.
I'm just saying, now that you put it that way, it's kind of reminding me of two countries that are neighbors, somewhat like I can equate to that situation, you know.
Who? North Korea and South Korea?
No, Haiti and Jordan.
Haiti and Jordan.
Yeah, but let's go with North Korea and South Korea.
Oh, are you talking about Haiti and Dominican Republic?
Dominican Republic, yeah.
Jordan, Helmut.
Jordan, now.
Geography threw me off, yo. I was like, how did Jordan get to the Caribbean?
To the Caribbean.
But yeah.
From the Middle East, that's it.
No, but literally with Haiti, you're right, with Haiti and the Dominican Republic, because they share.
When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Windhoek, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back. We continue. So that's when I was like, oh, Eureka. This is not, you know, it's not one thing that causes a problem. It's a series of problems. Now you have a domino effect that's coming from the disputes, and the court is trying to settle all these disputes. But
and it's taking long.
And it's taking forever. And we all know disputes don't take 15 minutes. They take forever to settle, because now you have to investigate, you have to, you know, allow all the different, well, respective councils, you know, to prepare for their case, and then you give them a setting date where they have to sit and basically present their evidence, and then you now have to go through their evidence for you to reach a judgment. All this time, the schools, schools need food. Clinics need medication. So are hospitals. And you know what? We are yelling at the wrong people. Now we are standing, now we are pissed off at, you know, now we are pissed off as, you know, at a nurse or a pharmacist. That's giving you, you know, that's giving you a list of prescriptions and telling you we don't have this medication. Maybe swing by the, you know, the pharmacy and get some at an eye-watering price. Well, now what's wrong with you guys? Now at this point, if I was a nurse, I'd go like, well, here's the thing. I can give you a few numbers for you to call. Let's start with the procurement guys and, you know, the ministry, the finance. I know you leave finance out of this because, you know, the former minister, she made that clear. So finance, we just allocate the budgets, which projects are prioritized by this SOE or ministry. That's on them.
But that's the thing, Amut. That's also why I believe the public for so long.
Yeah.
We have technically been misled. Well, on one side, it was the media's fault because the media probably also didn't understand the role of procurement. But that procurement is actually deemed from demands or needs that come through from the communities that exist and the lowest formats of government representation for service provision are local authorities.
Yeah.
Now, the same to also that the lowest format for government collection of revenue and taxation are these local authorities. Now, the narrative that I'm citing, Helmut, is the narrative that we were told continuously that the issue lies with Ministry of Finance, for Ministry of Finance to sort itself out. But how many times has Ministry of Finance had to put their own roadblocks, their own handbrake measures, their own reverse to first measures, you know, just to avert any kinds of negative publicity around corruption or possible corruption. That's why they established this policy procurement unit. The public procurement is the public procurement unit.
The procurement policy unit.
Yeah, procurement policy unit, the PPU, which views public procurement supplied or public procurement plans submitted by the various
ministries and SOEs.
Ministries, SOEs, local authorities, them as well. The aspect also in terms of that the public procurement unit, in terms of what the IPPR themselves have found out, is that there is not much enforcement from this PPU unit in terms of enforcing this basic statistical list at the back.
Yeah.
Of their own research. Because as at 30 September last month, 87 annual procurement plans were viewable from 176. Of the 87, where's that statistic? Of the 87, only 5 were submitted before December 2024.
Yep.
So, that means because they are supposed to submit these plans 3 months before end of March, the new financial year, dear listeners. This means only 5 entities submitted a procurement plan before.
Out of 100 and what?
Out of 176. Now the 87 versus the 87 into the 176 is a 49% of public entities that have submitted procurement plans that were viewable for the financial year 2025 to 2026. So, people need to understand the scale, once again, of...
So, in other words...
And I'm actually now putting this, Helmut, if it comes to a local authority, I'm throwing this at the council of that local authority. I'm throwing it at the council. Remember, I'm going as low as possible. The conversations I've had with Namibians, you know, the various parts that they hail from, who work and live in Windhoek, but they've got family and they come from other parts of the country. And then I just asked them, how is that place? Did that place change much? Because you know what's the old accusation? Yeah, nothing has changed since independence.
Oh, yeah.
So I asked him, so what has changed? What has improved? How long have you been living in the... I just do those basic things. If you're someone who's not native to Windhoek, but you're working and living in Windhoek because you had to move here. And then I listen to the stories and then I And then I make my own assumptions based upon this particular, this person's lived experience working and living in Windhoek versus growing up and living in the hometown that they came from. And then you hear the nightmare stories of the councillors that are the issue there. And that's why I can't find a fault with sanquasanization. I cannot find a fault.
Kwazalization is a vaccine, dude.
Sanquasanization. Helmut.
Okay.
Sanquasanization. Remember, it's our tagline.
Yeah, no, well,
people were laughing at me the other day when I went to the Namibian Agronomic Board annual report unveiling. A guy from Agribank was laughing. He said, "What's that word, Dwight, you and Helmut are using?"
Wait, what?
I said, "Sanquasanization." He said, "Yes."
See, we're broke but famous. Oh, no. I know, right?
Yeah, it's a Friday.
Yeah, sanquasalization is if you're in Namibia. If you're
okay,
in
you're saying it with an L.
Yeah.
I'm saying it with an N.
Sanquasalization. But, you know, that one is much more catchier because, you know, Namibia, nation, you know.
Yeah, but sanquasalization also speaks to an actual act, you know, saying you are zapping someone. Like Donald, you know, but yeah, let's not make a minister famous. We might have to send invoices. Or we would get invoices.
Now, if you're in South Africa, I think in South Africa, they must start calling it,
Kunanization.
No, that's a terrible one.
Or what did you want to say? You should actually have gone with Sibiya, you know? Like the one guy said, I've never seen a guy who's so good at digging himself into a hole.
He should have been a miner.
I was like, what? And then I start seeing memes there from people who were actually watching it on their WhatsApp status going like, if you were the lawyer of Sibiya, you know, you would be hiding him behind your legal, that, what's that garment that the lawyers wear in court? You know, behind that coat.
Look, Article 5 of the Police Act. Okay, well,
Namibia or South Africa?
No, South Africa. This is Sibiya. You have been in the police for about 3 decades, right? That's about 30 years.
Yeah.
Like, yes. Right. Article 5 of the Police Act. Can you please paraphrase it for us? Well, I need to find it. Where is it? Like, wait, what? The question is simple. Just paraphrase Article 5 of the Police Act for us.
Yeah.
Just paraphrase. You don't have to quote it word for word.
How you understand it.
How you understand it. He's been in the police for about 30 years. He has no clue.
He doesn't know his own act.
Exactly. He's a law enforcement.
But when they were talking to Mkonazi could tell you everything.
Exactly. He's been in law enforcement, enforcing law he can define. Everyone now is now asking one question. How the heck did that guy get that job?
Didn't you listen to how Mkunazi did it? How Mkunazi explained it? It was a question from Malema where Malema asked him, so, General, do you remember there was a time of the CADA deployments?
Oh.
And then Mkwanazi literally explained Malema's cadet deployment question, saying, yes, there were a bunch of juniors coming in that were obviously from the freedom fighters of the ANC who were just getting jobs in the rank and file of the police. And instead of them adhering to the rank and file system of the police, you have a junior police officer now comrading a general. Or comrading a division commander. Or comrading a senior officer in rank.
So this disaster has been brewing for a very long time.
Yeah, since 1994. That's what Mkunazi is explaining. And Mkunazi explained he became a police officer just before 1994, 1992, 1993. And that particular question, because Malema's question technically, as you could see into it, was trying to understand for how long has the police been rotten. Helmut, one of my siblings who stayed and lived in South Africa in Johannesburg for 10 years explained that at that time, South Africans knew the police in Johannesburg were rotten.
And that rot spilled over into the procurement sector.
Exactly.
And billions.
Well,
been lost.
If you hear how people,
that's one hospital, Dwight. One hospital.
How the guys were shopping around for tenders, ne? Just to get access to the tender.
One hospital.
Yep.
2 point something billion. God knows what you're gonna find if you investigate every hospital in every province.
Mm.
It's an unmitigated disaster. Now, the thing is, you know, the reason why this is a very, you know, this is a very important topic to have beforehand is that, wherever you look,
yeah.
You know, there are a lot of analysts that are explaining, political analysts that are explaining, democracy is dying. And this is for the most part because of economic inequalities.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
Yeah. And then you've got guys like Joshua, what's the guy's name? Joshua
Maponga?
Maponga.
Oh.
Coming and saying, no, we need dictatorships. Because we've got multicultural countries. So you want to sit with a civil war rather than with peace and coexistence.
There's one quote that I remember running across on social media, that resonates a lot when it comes to situations like this. And the quote goes something like, if you make laws, any law made by men that is, you know, that goes against the situation on the ground will be violated. If people are hungry, they are most likely going to steal.
Mm.
There are a lot of people that you will find, you know, take for example in a war-torn country, a lot of people will be doing a lot of things they wouldn't otherwise do. If, given different circumstances. Mm. So, that's why, whether it's a service provision incompetency or, any sector that's corrupt is going to rope the procurement, the procurement discussion into it because it's all about the money.
Yeah.
It's all about the money. So, having a discussion of procurement beforehand, which is why I totally understand the whole discussion around public procurement, in Namibia. Because, and the whole trying to balance a seesaw of, do we really need all these laws? Because they are now acting counterproductive.
Mm.
Yeah. Take the laws, for example, take the piece of legislation, for example, that allows for any bidder to dispute any result of, any result of a tender. If you get rid of it, that power will have to go to someone, and you don't want to give all that power to a minister. Because, well, fish rot.
Great news. Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. We continue. So, you can't dial down the laws. Because okay, look, you can go with the option of deregulation, but then you also risk opening up a floodgate for even more corruption.
Mm.
Yeah, because well, lack of regulation is going to basically lead to that, and increasing regulation is obviously going to cause the whole thing being sluggish. One of the European companies that armor cars, that build armored cars. So, they don't build cars. You just buy your car and then take it to them and then they can, armor plate basically everything. Yeah. Replace the windows and, you know, fit on all the, what's this, run flat tires.
Why does it sound like that Russian company that I once watched?
They do that. Now, the thing, then that's when I came to learn that those guys might as well just start making cars because they basically rip everything apart.
Yeah.
The battery that's in there is going to be gone. First of all, the engine is going to need a lot, a lot of fixing for it to basically pull all that armor because, it's going to be heavy. And you can't have the hinges of your door that are on your standard car and then put in armored windows because, again, all that armor plates on the side, it's going to be really heavy. So you have to replace a bunch of stuff. So when it comes to procurement, for me, it's somewhat, it's somewhat the same thing. Except this one is, I think it's even more confusing because over-regulation causes sluggishness in service provision. Under-regulation causes, well, money to be slipping through the fingers of people that have not used a nail cutter in a while.
Mm.
Now, then you end up in a situation where, but the end results of both is the same. Slow or no service provision. What you want is to provide the service. How do you balance regulation and efficient service provision?
Mm.
I think that's where we are at. Trying to balance efficient service provision and regulation. Because we can't get rid of the regulation because we're going to end up with a disaster. We can't, over-regulate because then, again, we're going to end up with a disaster. The procurement court, on the other hand, for me, is a brilliant proposal.
Yeah.
Except there's one part that, there's one part that's also barely, if ever, mentioned in the, in former Minister Shimi's motivation for the amendments. And that's the lack of procurement plans now. The lack of procurement plans for a lot of ministries and SOEs. Like, what role is this court going to play about, telling these guys to submit their procurement plans on time? Because look, it's okay for me to go shopping without a shopping list.
Yeah.
And it turns out that's not a very good sign for a ministry.
But here's the thing, Hamut. When it comes to procurement, you obviously know what your needs are.
Then we'll just, put everything in black and white and submit it to the procurement policy unit.
Exactly. Before time. If you see, okay, that's an issue or a thing that we could not deal with in this financial year.
Yeah.
Let's add it on for next financial year. Right?
No. Look, let me get for you, this one, the second point. The second paragraph in Minister Shimi's motivation, former Minister Shimi's motivation of the amendments is that the Public Procurement Act of 2015 came into effect, came into operation on the 1st of April 2017 with objectives to, amongst others, promote fundamental principles of procurement, which, among others, are fairness, transparency, accountability, efficiency, competitiveness, effectiveness, and integrity in public procurement. Now, you have, that's a whole list, but you can basically sum up the whole thing into transparency. Now, this is transparency it's public procurement. So the public must be made aware what's going on.
But here's the thing, Amar. Remember, you are referencing the
motivation.
The motivation that Minister Shimi gave.
Yeah.
There was another amendment that popped up. Remember, I sent you two documents.
Yeah.
The one was the one that, the draft to the public procurement amendment bill that Minister Shimi submitted in March.
Yeah.
And then another one popped up. The one that pops up, you remember you're still talking about the court.
Yeah.
That was what Minister Shimi wanted to solve.
Yeah.
The dispute system. The new draft, is to establish a whole authority. I know, I just had to throw the spanner into the middle of the show for no reason. The new draft, let me read it to you, just the motivation for the changes. It doesn't cite which month, because obviously it, apparently came through, because I said it came a little bit earlier this year, because it didn't come through in October. But the new public procurement amendment bill that is now on the, that has now been public consultations that's supposedly been done, according to IPPR's people, where they state to regulate. Now, this is what stands in the draft for the amendment, the suggestion being made. To regulate the procurement of goods, work and service, works and services, the letting or hiring of anything or the acquisition or granting of rights for or on behalf of and the disposal of assets of public entities, to establish the public procurement regulatory authority. So what happens to the public procurement board? The Central Procurement Board of Namibia, CBBN, the Procurement Policy Unit and the Central Procurement Board of Namibia. Okay, so it'll still be there, the CBBN, and to provide for their powers and functions, to provide for the procurement committees and procurement management units and their powers and functions, to provide for the appointment of bid evaluation committees and their functions. Do you see now all these structures being put up? So because we supposedly didn't have these things also.
Because you can't set up an entity without outlining what purpose it's going to serve. That's where the functions comes in, yeah.
The other one was to provide for procurement methods, to provide for bidding process, bidding challenge and review. So that means your court idea is now out, because I'm trying to get now to the court situation. To establish, here's the court, to establish a public procurement court to adjudicate matters relating to public procurement. So that means when Minister Shimi submitted his
motivation
with his suggestion for the draft, for the amendment, it was just to start with the court. Remember?
He really emphasized
dispute resolution.
Yeah.
Sort out the dispute resolution process.
Yeah.
This one aims to unbundle and then reattach with new functions and features. But it's still the same old, same old.
Oh, dear Lord.
With new functions, features, and a whole bunch of new people that'll get salaries.
Now, you see, that court idea, and the reason why I emphasized it, is because, for me, despite the fact that it's a serious, pain in the neck of, the Ministry of Finance, because they now, like at this point, if we can go back to also to the ministry, to what the Ministry of Education is doing by trying to implement a whole, the whole teacher's professionalization discussion, where they want to,
The final engagement was today, Hamud and I couldn't go. I went somewhere else.
Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
At this point, your country is pregnant with several entities. So get ready for new diapers if one of the,
What? What?
Baby milk formula coming up. Now, so, more expenditure for the country.
What? What was that?
That's an excellent analogy. But, I don't care what you say, but look.
No, Helmut, no. Look. Here's what we call for an exorcism for some form. I didn't expect that sentence.
The point I'm trying to make with that very disturbing example, more like analogy.
Pregnancy is a matter of fact, but I want to understand, how is the country pregnant with
it? Well, it's for one, it's a she, motherland. I'm not helping my case, am I?
No. Oh my goodness. Don't worry, guys. This is Friday.
So, establishment of a court and heavily emphasizing dispute resolution is a brilliant idea. Except the reason behind everything that everything that the minister emphasized, which is the establishment of a public procurement court to settle all these disputes arising from all these bidders who just don't want to accept that, well, I have lost, I'll have to try again next time. Now, that's not to say that you are not allowed to call for a dispute if you have noticed some irregularities in how the tender was awarded.
Yeah,
that's literally the reason why the law was put in place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, once you have all this in place, this whole thing can be summarized in one thing. transparency. It's public procurement. So you want to let, you know, so you want to let in, you want to let people in on what's going on in the public sector. All the, you know, albeit there are not a lot of us that read it anyway. But the thing is, well, you just have to put it out there. So, take the submission of procurement plans, for example. You know, a ministry, you know, budgets for, you know, basically writes drafts of what, a draft, you know, and prices of what they plan on procuring, 2026-2027 financial year. Yeah, and then submit it with the Ministry of Finance. That's at the Directorate of Procurement Policy Unit. Now, these guys now put it on there. Is it the e-procurement portal? Yeah, for basically for everyone to see. Now, that's for public scrutiny, if you ask me. That's for public scrutiny. So I feel like if you leave the submission of procurement plans on time out and only focus on procurement court, a lot of people will only be finding out about procurement plans in disputes. And you know what happens then? WhatsApp qualified lawyers who will be working double time. But a lot of, you know, a lot of things will be, you know, can be cleared.
Okay, if everybody, you just, everybody needs a job. What's wrong with the WhatsApp qualified lawyers?
Qualified lawyers. Mark Zuckerberg State University. Now, the things. It's all online, guys. Don't worry. I think by making information available to the public from as early as planning, it makes the, you know, it basically makes people understand, you know, more like, you know, trace the footprints of where did this, you know, where did all these things come from? You can, then you can, well, then you can basically trace the history of basically every dispute. How did we get here? Well, there was a dispute. There was an, there was a tender that was put out by this ministry. And then, well, this entity won, won the tender. Why is this ministry procuring this? Well, according to the procurement policy unit, e-procurement portal, or more like e-procurement, this, now, which is based on the plans this ministry submitted. All these things can then be traced from, can be traced from the dispute to the awarding of the tenders, to the procurement policy unit, to the ministry itself. Otherwise, then you just run into a bunch of guys suing each other in a procurement court, and like, where's this tender coming from? The Ministry of, when did they submit?
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first, only made possible by Heineken's five-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
We are really trying today, guys.
Yeah. 30...
30 more minutes, yeah.
29 more minutes. Don't worry. It's well, it's a Friday, and Friday is just, especially in this weather, is just awesome.
No, really, Helmut. That's why I'm a Monday. Awesome weather. That's why I'm a Monday guy. You know, it's a lovely Monday.
Nah, it's a lovely Friday.
Yeah, and then you just somewhere you go slide on a banana peel, oops, then you're into Monday again.
Yeah.
That's how I don't like, that's why I don't like Fridays. But it also means that, you know, if they were perpetual nightmares, that it doesn't persist past a certain day. At least where you could know that, you know what, Friday shows up.
The beautiful thing about Fridays is that I know that, if I, you know, pick a beer or two along, you know, along the road on my way home, you know, I'm just gonna be watching my TV shows or playing my video games while, you know, sipping on the beer. But although I know that, you know, a beer only goes hand in hand with watching something. Video games, your homies are going to be kissing the heck out of you because you will be making rookie mistakes. But, you know, I'm just going to be sipping my beer without worrying that tomorrow I may be late for work. That's the reason why we like Friday. Just sip it all and then sleep until 12 in the afternoon.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. Just, you know, I just don't do that on Saturdays because, you know, I'm sure from 11 to 1, I don't want to wake up at 12 with 50 missed calls from, I don't want to mention any names.
You were almost there. But we were still on procurement.
Yeah. Oh no, we're still on procurement. And the reason why it's important to have this conversation, guys, is because I've been watching one protest after another and they are all, it's all roads lead to
bad procurement.
Bad procurement. Bad procurement. So it's important. I feel like, we're one of those very few countries that are now caught in between a rock and hard place. Should we continue regulating or should we deregulate? And thank heavens we're not taking the direction of deregulating to make things easy. To make things easy. Now, look, when they were talking about amendments, the first thing that came in my mind was like, maybe they just want to expand is that Section 6, to include a lot of, to expand the definition of what, of emergency procurement. But then it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter whether you expand the definition of emergency procurement or not. The bottom line is emergency procurements are expensive. We just don't have the money. We don't have money to waste. So emergency procurement should not be the norm. But right now, thanks to all the disputes that are arising from most of these, from most of these tender awards, a lot of ministries or SOEs are left with not much choice, but for them to get some job done in the middle of all the disputes. Emergency procurement, here we go. And then the Office of the Auditor General comes to them and tells them, well, you describe this as emergency procurement, but according to the Procurement Act, it doesn't match the definition of emergency procurement. And, well, you have yours truly here that just the world starts cooking everyone.
Well, firstly, that they cook worthy, obviously. You know,
They are.
Properly. But the discussion that obviously comes out of this has been a discussion of, you know, what's actually going to happen. Remember, Helmut, a little bit earlier in our sessions, I made a statement where I said, I'm a little bit worried because even though the president herself has said, you know, that corruption will now be treated as a form of treason, but when you go look at NDB6, NDB6 does mention, you know, anti-corruption measures or something to an extent, but it's not very strong in terms of saying outright, you know, how they're going to try to be transparent in dealing with this measure.
I think some of those words are very, 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 very,
they're very, very vague, no?
Not just vague. Yeah.
Is it just like to fill? Just to fill the space on the paper.
You have to understand that fulfilling them will give you a character of near dictatorship because you have to understand what do you do to someone who is convicted of treason?
You have to put them through the processes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, corruption is, don't get me wrong. You have to understand, corruption is bad. Corruption can easily be defined as treason. Mm-hmm. There's a reason for that, because if you look at what's going on in South Africa, for example, you have
the police.
Exactly. Magistrates are involved in that.
And the magistrates are buddies with crime underlords.
$2 point something billion was looted. That means there were, there were a lot of preventable deaths that happened in these hospitals.
Yeah.
Preventable deaths.
Whistleblowers that were sad, that were assassinated.
Exactly.
They were also preventable deaths.
They were also preventable deaths. So, you know, classifying corruption as treason, you'll have a lot of justifications for that. And you won't be the first one. In ancient Greece, if you were caught, if you were convicted of corruption, they skinned your life. But I'm not saying let's go there because, well, first of all,
do you know what the Romans did? Even if you ran away from the battlefield as a soldier, as a legionnaire, do you know what they did to you? Helmut, they would tell you, okay, you're a deserter. Make sure we don't find you. It was the same desertion mechanism or tactic that the British used up until the First World War. They would hunt you.
Literally.
Literally, and kill you. The British would drag you back in World War One, put you in front of a firing squad. They won't even put you through a military court. They would just, you would just be charged there. Desertion, bring you back, put you in front of the firing squad. Ha, we're done.
All of that because you didn't participate in colonialism?
No. Mm-hmm. You ran away from the battle. Not colonialism. Remember, colonialism is the political mechanism, political and economic mechanism.
Yeah.
We're talking about on the day of the battle.
On the day of the battle.
Yeah.
Oh, not
the mechanisms that helped win them certain things.
Okay, but again, look, I really like how as a species we sometimes create societies west of the West. Pirates.
Hmm.
Pirates did not fall from the sky.
Oh no, they were known as privateers before.
Exactly. They were privateers. They were created by the system that then turned around and started fighting them.
Yeah, you are robbing me as well. Why are you robbing me? Why, you guys didn't pay me last week.
Uh-huh.
What do you expect?
So, in other words, when they rob you, they're bad guys, but you don't have a problem giving them money to go and rob your competitors. Because that's what they did.
And then they started, and then they gave birth to Anne Bonny, Edward Blackbeard Teach. What was the other guy's name? I almost said Long John Silver, but he's actually a fictional character.
The Barbarossa brothers.
The two guys from the Mediterranean.
Yep.
Yeah.
Guys caused a lot of chaos in Europe. Yo.
There was another guy also. There was a guy apparently also, I don't know if he was Arab or Turkish or Ottoman. He was, I think he had down the eastern coast or something. And all those privateers did was say, hey, listen, you hired us because they worked on commissions. You hired us. We're doing the job that you hired us for. And then they realized, but the pay is not being done. The reason the guys who started the pirates were the British. The British hired the privateers.
That was during the Spanish expansion and the greed of South America because they did not allow anyone to actually participate in their quote-unquote expedition of the New Worlds.
Now, when the British realized, okay, let's try colonizing North America, they realized that these privateers were an issue. Because, Helmut, it's us. It's a very long distance to sail all the way from the Caribbean back to England. And in between there could be a French warship. And in between there could be a Danish warship. Or a...
That's risky.
Who was the other? At that stage, it was the big guy in Europe was the Spanish and the Portuguese. In between there could be Spanish and Portuguese warships. And you're now, gallivanting your way back.
Atlantic Ocean.
Gallivanting your way back here through the Atlantic, a hotbed of where those other guys could be. With your little ship. No. And then the French come onto the scene. Because now the French are also busy exploring. Remember, the French were technically the first to colonize into North America before the English. Mm-hmm. The English, they had settlers that went there. Those early settlers.
They didn't have settlers that went. They had settlers that ran away from.
No, they had settlers that were sent away.
That's a fancy way of putting it.
You know, you are saying they ran.
Yeah.
These guys were literally said by the king,
uh-huh,
we don't want you. Find yourself a space. And then they packed up.
Found themselves a space and the system followed them.
Yeah. So technically, it wasn't an act of political, policy by the British.
So it's somewhat a little different from Australia.
Yeah. Even though in Australia's case, we remember I told you, we would have been like Australia.
Prison colony.
Penal colony. They call it penal colony.
Still prison.
Yeah, it's still a prison, but it would have been a penal colony. Because no one was here. None of the, before that Berlin conference, no one was here in Namibia. So, the French were almost the guys that went and actively built, established, and put up, you know, like formal structures and stuff in Canada. Before the French Indian War, which happened just before the American Civil War, the French Indian War is that the French king at that time was Louis the 14th, kept bragging, yeah, he could see, what was the fort's name in Quebec? The fort was so big, apparently, that it was one of the biggest forts built outside of Europe. The fort is apparently so big he could see it from Paris. Obviously, it's a blatant lie because, you know, he was just bragging about
Paris,
wealth.
France?
Yeah. It was obviously just bragging about his wealth.
Yeah.
But the concern obviously was there that the French didn't take anything serious about what the British were trying to do, because then the British started landing and expanding in what we now know as the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever seen here on the east coast of the U.S., and you just end above Florida, if you can see how close all those English towns are, which are now cities and states.
Very long names.
Very long names, and they all have it's a name of someone, you know, like Jacksonville and Kentucky and West Virginia, it's North Carolina, South Carolina, West Virginia, or is it just Virginia, the state of Virginia, and you get the state of Kentucky. You get what's the other ones? New Jersey, New York State, all those states close to each other. The towns are
grouped. Right. That's very English.
Yeah, the towns are grouped very. The towns and cities are grouped very close to each other. For example, I think Boston and Philadelphia are very close to each other, and then you've got Boston, Philadelphia, and there's another one. Boston, Philadelphia.
Yeah, I can't help you there.
There's another one close to them. But I always forget this guy's name. It's Philadelphia, Boston, and
Havana.
No. New York is pretty new-ish. If people ever thought that New York was
literally
first, yeah, it's new-ish because New York they've got a lot of Dutch heritage, New York. But the point that I wanted to get to. So the French weren't worried because a buffer zone existed between where the British were and where the French were in North America. The buffer zone were all those Native American tribes with their territories. The issue obviously at hand was that the French had agreements with the Native Americans, and the British obviously wanted to take Quebec from France. And that's how the French Indian War broke out specifically. And both of them worked with Native American tribes and groups.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vindhuk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vindhuk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vindhuk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Welcome back.
Don't worry, guys. That was just me wheezing there.
Mm-hmm.
If you heard me wheezing.
Ah. Un momento. Eagle FM.
Oh, sorry, man.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Oh, cool, cool. How are you people?
We're all right.
When did you go gangster?
Ah, you. yeah, don't you mean? Eagle FM. Ah, you guys.
Uh-huh.
And now, how are you doing?
No,
right,
I think I don't know. Somebody asked me a question this morning. Was it today or yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
Could be this young man who is ought to ask a lot of questions.
Uh-huh.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe he inherited that one from Helmut. And I see Helmut is mentoring him very well, nicely there.
Very inquisitive.
Who is this? David.
Oh.
Yeah, they speak almost the same language, you know? I don't know where they are inheriting that thing. So now this is procurement.
Yeah.
People, I told you that people want to chop money.
Uncle Bonner, that's the point that you start from.
but people will always want to chop money, which is why the regulations are needed. Otherwise, people go chop money finish.
I'm telling you, even Dwight, when you were hammering on regulation and things like that. My friend, you know, these guys, some of these guys, sometimes, they just challenge the thing.
And, just because they lost.
That challenging of the thing is that process now, especially in the major cases and things like that. They do delay the things, my friend. Because of these technical things and all these other things, maybe the expansion of the, term, the concept and things like that. It's very trick, man. It's very, very trick, and they just come with the, they cook some kind of wedding which you are not, and then they say, this one is too vagrant, and it's not including this thing, this other one, and then they keep on challenging and keep on challenging. Maybe that's why Helmut is now dying this disqualified lawyer, see?
Uncle Bona, they are known as WhatsApp qualified lawyers, not disqualified.
Those ones, they give us problems, my friend.
WhatsApp qualified lawyers are top
notch. They launch the things and the things, it has to go. Maybe it's good when they talk about mediation. So that thing, maybe you think it will smoothen the process. And even the court proceeding, I was listening, these people are saying, no, this one's supposed to go to the civil courts, and this one is not the civil criminal issue, because it's a dispute, it's a trading, and what. So now, when you look at some of this element, you discover that, some things were not really done unlawful, really taking place, and issues of that nature. My friend, before you know what's happening, it's like an independent stadium. 2 years is gone. 1 year is gone. And the people are suffering, and they need emergency, They need an emergency. So things need to be procured. Yeah. And this other lawyer comes in.
Another technical issue.
Then I say, Helmut, you guys, why don't you have mercy upon us or what?
There's one thing. Look, the decision we make, you have to understand that we make excuses for a living. And, the excuse that we are going to make will depend on how much money, just give us money and we'll make an excuse out of anything.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Then I say, you guys, Dwight. My friend, please be watching him properly, because those excuses that he's talking about, those are really issues, my friend. And they can really hinder issues.
Enemy of progress.
To move.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. It's good that they just follow regulation.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the confusion and chaotic situation will happen.
All right.
100% Angabona. Yeah. Thanks for coming through.
Yeah. Welcome, sir.
Look, disputes are they're very good for upholding democracy, but sometimes, they can be used to be very petty. Yeah, you can just, start suing each other over some silly stuff. I'm just remembering a bunch of petty kings and queens in the history of monarchs. That, from a documentary I was watching the other time. But, this whole thing is basically something that is, worth talking about, because, for us to achieve whatever goal, developmental goal we have in place, especially as it relates to the, whether it's SDG related or national development plan, we have a time frame of NDP 6 ends in 2030. So that means we don't have a lot of time. We have a lot of time if you are, you know, if you are studying for a career, but development wise, that's not a lot of time.
But here's the thing also, Hamad. You can study for the career because that's obviously where the education dimension also comes in. Mm. You can study for the career. The path after that in terms of, are you going to get the employment that you studied for? Yes or no? Now, yeah. That is where the coin toss, the 50-50, the probability analysis comes through. When you look at the planning for a country's future, there you can't go wrong. Yeah, you can make a few mistakes here and there and stuff, but you can't go wrong there because you've got to know targeted-wise, what are we going to do? Targeted-wise, are we going to still have the chicken and the egg together? Targeted-wise, are we going to make the rice with the pot of meat together? Because you can't just have rice and you can't just have meat. We need to have that balanced diet situation. Mm-hmm. But it's all based upon what, Helmut? What is procurement based upon? The existence of procurement.
Buying and selling?
No. Mm-hmm. Money.
Oh, yeah.
Money. You first need to say it. And that's where our basic income grant talk came through. Remember? With the executive director of finance said, Mr. Amovindu, about you can only do things with the money you've got. If you don't have money, it pushes on to next year.
Again, the thing is, we don't. I think that's why these amendments is almost like the discussions in this whole amendment procurement amendment is very important. We don't have money to throw around. We don't have money to burn. That means the little we have, we are toasting a lot of it in emergency procurements, which are known to be very costly. So, basically dialing down the emergency procurements could save us a whole lot of money. So, except we are very good at suing each other over, well, I didn't win, so it should have been me. So I'm just going to challenge this thing.
No, but I actually view this differently, Hamad.
Yeah, which is?
The sluggishness of the procurement system actually means we're not spending money.
Oh, yeah, that's
so the money just,
it's just
sits sitting still, moves on to the next financial year. Yeah. Now another dispute comes through, the money sits still, moves into another financial year. Get another dispute, the money sits still, moves into another financial year.
Budget allocation March. So you have disputes that are going into June and you have a budget review in October. So holy cow, that's not a lot of time.
You understand, you understand why Minister Shimi's particular plan at the start of the year was to try and solve the dispute resolution.
Let's just have a court dedicated to solving this mess.
Yeah. Let's just speed up the process. Yeah. But now the new amendment speaks about, well, let's Lego. The Lego out of this situation. And everyone is like, what? The Lego out of the situation? But before that, before we continue, guys, we're quickly going to take a short break with some ads and come back after it. Namibia, are you ready to win big? Coca-Cola is giving away up to $1 million Namibian dollars in prizes. Every week, one lucky winner walks away with $10,000 cash. All you have to do is grab your favorite Coke, Fanta, Sprite, Stony, or Twist. In 2 liters, 1.25 liters, or 600 ml bottles. Look under the yellow cap. Dial *142*458#45. # punch in your code. Follow the prompts to enter. And just like that, you could be our next big winner. Refresh, enjoy, and win with Coca-Cola. T's and C's apply. Go to the Coca-Cola social media pages to watch the video on how to enter the competition. Bavitsa University, where the 2026 applications are now open for the Faculty of Law, Commerce, and Education. Programs on offer are Diploma in Legal Studies for Level 6, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Science in Project Management Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours for Math and Science for the grades 4 to 6, and Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours for Math and Science for grades 8 to 12. Application fee is $230 million for and the application deadline is 30 November 2025. How to apply? Applications can be done online on our website at www.wu.edu.na. The application fee for all courses is $230 million. Payments can be done at the bank, EFT, or swiping at our campuses. The proof of payment must be uploaded on the application form along with all other relevant documents. And no ATM deposit receipt as proof of payment will be accepted. All foreign qualifications must be accompanied by an NQA evaluation report or a certificate. And for more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Velvici University, where everyone is an achiever.
So, you were on...
the opposite side of the thing. I also understand your point, Helmut. If the dispute resolution doesn't happen, then you sit with, oh, we don't know what kind of a service provider this is. This could potentially be a Tembisa bank kind of a Tembisa hospital kind of a situation where the service provider just goes and buys Lamborghinis.
You know, I think one thing, you know, one problem is that I don't think we have, you know, I don't think there's a universal definition of what corruption is. That's why it's very easy to throw that word around.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's very, I think that's where the regulations now comes in handy, because they are not only supposed, you know, they are not only there to, you know, for transparency. They are not only there to, you know, to more like draw a roadmap on how certain tasks, more like on a national level, must be executed. But they are also there to clear the air when the accusations of of corruption begins to pop up. Take for example, you wake up the next day and you find out that take a particular minister is being accused of corruption. These regulations comes in handy for two reasons. One, if there is, it's up to, well, the minister can basically use that to explain to you that, this is how we did this. So, the reason why we did this is because these are laid out procedures on how to buy this. If I missed anything on this, then it falls, it can easily be described as corruption because, so it's very easy then for a public official to basically explain to people that, no, this is what we procured. These are the procedures we followed. Explain to me which one of these is corruption, because without the proper procedures, it will be very difficult for any public official to basically defend themselves against any allegations, even if they didn't do anything wrong.
Yep. It's also a discussion, Helmut, about seeing where we are actually looking for the best template from, because I love referencing South Africa because many of our systems come from South Africa.
True.
But, you know, if there was a way in which we could develop our own that helps us understand our own, obviously, which has been the same island.
Yeah.
Okay, because in North Korea, the physical feature that divides them is the river.
Yeah.
That's their border. That's the river that.
Wait, I thought it was the DMZ.
The DMZ is around a river.
Oh.
Yeah. So there is a part of the river. There is a part where the river does not run, which is a part which is just land that you can see.
Yeah.
But there is, in many cases, there is, you know, land river situations.
Yeah. Now, procurement. We are making plans as a country to, we have come to learn as a country that, our Procurement Act of 2015, there are some kind of flaws with it that we want to fix. Now, those flaws, one of them, how to solve the disputes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of bidders. Every time they get into a dispute, because you have to understand that, if there is a tender awarded and bidders apply for the tender and then one of them wins the tender, those ones that have, that did not win the, or more like that were not awarded the tender, they have, they have the right, it's within their legal rights to dispute the results that are coming out.
And then a dispute resolution.
Now pops up.
Yeah.
Now all the procurement plans
have to be put
on hold. Committee
has to be put together. Everyone is told, hey, guys, listen, relax. this guy, Dwight, is angry.
Yeah.
Let's, we first have to listen to him. And then 2 months down the line, oh no, because not everyone from the dispute panel is available. 2 months from now, let's make a date. And everybody's like, yes, that
yeah,
date.
In that poor
this
hospital.
Could have been next week. This could have been the next day. No, we all flew, you know, to some important conference somewhere in the world. Yeah. So you guys have to wait for us.
Yeah. And you have kids at the hostel that are waiting for food that tender could have delivered.
Or you're waiting for sick patients in the hospital who are told, you know what, your head has to continue throbbing with your high blood pressure. We're sorry, but there is no high blood pressure. High blood pressure medication. So just go and throb somewhere else, you know?
Now, yeah, well, here's well, you can just...
Here's Panado.
Thank you.
Suck on this for a while.
Yeah, for now.
Even though Panado is not a nice thing to...
Until further notice, you know.
Until
Look, we don't know the exact date. Look, the guys that are involved in the dispute don't know the exact date that they're going to resolve the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's no way the hospital, let alone a nurse or a doctor, is going to know what's, you know, for the most part, what's going on high up the you know, ministry. So, this is the main problem that was pointed out by, by our now former finance minister Ipumbushimi earlier this year, when he was motivating the reasons for the amendments. Okay. The establishment of a procurement court, that means, because now the establishment of the procurement court is one of those things that this amendments is proposed to, one of the things that will be part of the amendments if they go through. So which is going to come with a lot of advantages though, because one of the advantages this is like we have a labor court.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just dedicated to to specifically settling one type of dispute.
Yeah.
And that's just labor-related matters. That's all.
Mm.
Criminal, civil, anything outside of labor. If it's not labor-related, magistrate court, supreme court, magistrate court, high court, supreme court. That's constitutional stuff. But now, then you have the electoral court, strictly election-related.
Yeah.
Yeah. Albeit it's just mostly parliamentarian disputes, parliamentary election disputes, presidential, supreme court. This one is going to be somewhat like that in terms of, in terms of this, the purpose it's going to serve.
Yeah, but Hamoud, now it's a court now.
Oh,
well,
sorry.
I got a,
yeah.
Just a quick message that I received. I'm sorry, guys.
A heck of a ringtone. You know, share it with me.
Well, that's on silent now. You started with a dispute. Angle, obviously,
oh, yeah.
Which emanates from our discussion today. But we technically have to also give the listeners the lowdown, because dear listeners, if you guys did not know, if you've not watched any of the parliament sessions or attended them, because you can also attend them, remember this, as the public.
Yeah.
There have been two amendment bills being placed in parliament to amend the Public Procurement Act. I say two. Mm-hmm. One happened in March, just before independence, just before the swearing in
of
the new guys, the new administration. And another one happened a little bit later in the year, which is about, I think, a month or a month and a half back. So this obviously should tell you guys that when Helmut started off with the dispute angle of our discussion regarding public procurement, because public procurement has been shown in three of our discussions, Helmut, to be
three of our discussions
ad break.
There's no price like the ShopRite price. That's why we're committed to bringing you lower prices on all the essentials you need, like 40, 42 or 44 Lovies disposable nappies, all variants for only 139 Namibian dollars 99 per pack, and 500 grams Romy 37% fat spread for only 14 Namibian dollars 99. Never pay more than the ShopRite price. Valid until 19 October 2025. Only at ShopRite. Catch Ready Steady Cook on One Africa. Proudly brought to you by ShopRite Namibia. Yeah.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back. In three of our discussions, public procurement.
Yeah, so in three of our discussions previously that we've had here on The Home Run, we've cited public procurement. We've cited that the local authorities outside of Comas and Irongo have to play significantly larger roles in procurement as well as also in the development of Namibia in terms of, you know, doing their development plans. Why I say this, Helmut, is because on Wednesday, the article that I co-authored with Inamenwa Erasesvali specifically cited the perspective in terms of Minister Shifuda back in last week at the CSO engagement that she had. This is obviously building up to the midterm budget review, which is next week. She cited that it'll be next week. We still have to see that notice to say that it'll be next week. So the midterm budget review for next week, the 21st of October, that, you know, she and her office, the Windhoek-based Ministry of Finance guys, paid visits to much of the local and regional authorities. I mentioned this yesterday, where she asked, you know, guys, what's the issue with the development budget? Now, for us Namibians, we're not interested in the operational budget, which is just the salaries, water and electricity and all those other things, you know, like, you know, keeping the printer fed with printer paper, you know, from Rototrim and all that, and Mondi and all that stuff, you know, ensuring that the printer has some use in the office.
Yeah.
No, we're not interested in that. What we are interested in is the rest of the country, which has also brought out much discussion, has been the development budget, what the government invests into the country. Now, Minister Shifuda cited, and I, you know, it's in our Wednesday edition of the Village e-paper, that the feedback resonated with the statistics that the finance ministry had obviously collected regarding why the development budget is only at below 30% implementation, and we are halfway through the financial year of the public sector. Halfway through, Helmut. So that means there's November. The whole of December you can basically count as a public service holiday. January. Okay, half of January. Because some of them also take half of January for holiday. Then you've got February and March. So you only have technically... November. I said November, February and March. It's only 3 months out of this five-month period. Then the financial year... The public sector financial year closes. So do you understand? Do you understand the magnitude of that article that we wrote on Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it in reference to time, what's the amount of time that you can do? Now remember, our 1,000-page medium-term, short-term expenditure framework document that we cited. You know, after Minister Shifuda gave her budget speech at the start of the year.
The 500 or the 1,000?
The 1,000. The 500 one ended this year.
Yeah.
Or it'll end next year, sorry. It'll end next year.
Did we start everything early?
Well, here's the thing, Helmut. It at least tells you what is to be done, the length of the thing, the funding of the thing, whether it's internal or external funding, and where it's positioned. That's why it's 1,000 and 500 pages respectively, the two documents that we reviewed. Now, those are capital projects. Those are specifically capital projects. Now, here's what people also have to understand, guys. The nice thing with accounting is that you can have something roll over into another financial year. Imagine Nekertal, Helmut. Nekertal flowed from one financial year into another financial year into another financial year.
Yeah, because it's a mega project. It's not one that you can finish in one financial year.
Exactly. So there are going to be projects that will flow from one into another. And every financial year, you set out its budget for that financial year.
Yeah.
So it would say, for example, you would read an article somewhere where it said, oh, this thing would cost this much. But if they say how many years,
yeah,
let's say the project manager, which is the engineering company, then you can break up the cost.
The overall cost.
With the amount of time that it takes.
Yeah.
So then you can see, oh, estimated that you can at least allocate, you know, just in bare basic division that you would do. This is how much per year. Then you understand the time frame. And then you can understand and anticipate that that cost flows from one year into another year into another year.
Okay. So let me just make sure I'm, you know, just getting the picture here. So, if take for example is, is overall estimated to cost five million.
Let's say it's 100 million. Let's say something costs 100 million.
5 million. So that's pocket change. Okay. It's 100 million.
I don't know what you were going to do with 5 million.
Well,
not even the street here in front of us. Do you know that?
Well,
and this street is 200 meters.
Started a mining company with whalers. No,
and then we hoped we would be hitting something. No. Yeah. No, you are right, Hamid. You are right. No,
but, I love my
but that million was just to say, hey, listen, just go switch on the lights in the office.
Yeah.
Go switch on the lights in the office.
And then let's cross our fingers and hope someone with more money than us will come in,
and invest buy the furniture.
Yeah, invest money and then, donate out of the kindness of their heart,
you know,
to us, you know, a large chunk of what they invested into.
So we just keep playing concession agreements. We just keep conceding. I understand why many Namibians are annoyed with the statements that, you know, that even President Geingob had to defend. The statements that, that the former Namco boss, Mr. Malunga, said. I understand their annoyance, but you and I, we understand the legality of why they had to take a stance like that in terms of saying, you know what, we can just as well look at the resource there in the ocean. We can look at it. But the downside is they all have a mandate to find the prosperity path for us. Mm-hmm. You see, Helmut, here on Wednesday night, when I had the engagement here with the Chinese ambassador, Ambassador Zhao Weiping, about the, you know, China's development path, the ambassador kept hammering on one thing. Understand that you have a mandate to develop and develop your people, develop your country, develop. You have to find your needs. You can't wait on an IMF thing coming and telling you, you must do this before we give you the money. Or you have to wait.
We're going to give you the money, but you can only.
But you have to do these structural reforms.
Yeah.
Or it comes with whoever's particular another development partner's financing and says, yeah, but if you're going to, this thing that we're going to help you develop in your country, but you have to meet our climate goals.
Yeah.
Which is CBAM, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, everything that the ambassador cited was saying, look, there are good things that you can see working in other countries in their development path, but you have to take that, the goods there, and you have to tailor your development path.
Don't just copy and paste.
Now, when we sit with this particular discussion, Helmut, we can obviously see the biggest roadblock that has been cited by the public sector itself with stakeholder engagements that the public sector did with itself, meaning they did a lot of introspection with themselves, was that they were told by the smaller local authorities and regional authorities, it's public, it's the Procurement Act that's the biggest roadblock for us. But here's the thing, Helmut. We've had so much negative publicity about the public sector and their inability to just make sure that if I give you $100 here, Helmut, and you said, Dwight, I'm going to go buy copy paper, that you come back with the invoice that shows the copy paper had been bought.
Yeah.
And that here is the copy paper. And that you give that thing so that the accounts in the procurement department of that ministry or that local authority or regional council can be updated. Remember when we did that Minister of Health Auditor General's report?
Yeah. Major's
broken. Where we came under that section where it said, yeah, the ministry classified some things for emergency procurement and most of these things were not worthy of being classified as for emergency procurement.
You know what? there's a part that there's a part that I always missed, because when we went through that, I kept asking myself, why would someone just wake up one morning and decide to just go on a procurement, on a emergency procurement shopping spree? Yeah. And that question, that question had somewhat been all, has always been at the back of my head until I went through, Minister, Shimi's motivation for the, for the Public Procurement Act amendments. Yeah. That's when I think, the motivation drew, a picture for me of why, one of the reasons behind some of these, emergency procurements. Most of, one of the main reasons I think, I would argue, one that I was able to pick from the from Minister Shimi's, former Minister Shimi's motivation.
Yeah.
Is the disputes.
Exactly.
Because now what you have is, it's January, the schools are reopening, schools need, especially those ones that have hostel, they need food. Now, the ministry then, needs to deliver, they were basically given money to basically, they were given money, all these things were accounted for that particular financial year. What happens then is, a tender is put out and people apply for this tender. And then after, obviously, after the whole vetting process, it's awarded to one entity. Now, because it's legal, it's not, it has nothing to do with corruption. If you apply for a tender and you are not awarded that tender, someone else is awarded, and you feel like maybe you have noticed some kind of irregularities, you can dispute that award. This is where you now have, this whole dragging legal process of trying to resolve these disputes. But, well, guess what? All throughout this dragging process, all these legal disputes, hostels need food, clinics or hospitals need medications and equipment. So, what do you do? So, a lot of ministries then, when they are witnessing something like that, they're basically just for them to get something, to get a job or two done, emergency procurement. Now you have a big, and that domino effect doesn't end there. Emergency procurements cost more than regular procurements.
Yep.
So now you're spending more of the money you don't have than you were supposed to. Because, after going through the Office of the Auditor General report in the Ministry of Health, the question I kept asking myself was, this is not corruption. These people did not take this money and then buy Vrupas. No. They took the money and then bought equipments for the ministry. It's just that the way in which they did the buying, they did not follow the procedures laid in place. And I kept asking myself, why? Well, thanks to Minister Shimi, the question is answered. At least, at least to me, it's answered. Yeah. Because, people are suing each other left, right, and center. So this is one of those one in a million, situations where you can point at us, you and me, the general public, being, and the enemy of our own progress. Because it's,
Not at Dwight and Helmut. Guys.
Not Dwight and Helmut.
At yourselves.
Yeah.
Because we were not involved with the procurement.
Because
we had to make that distinction.
We have to make that clear. Because you have to understand it's you and me. It's either us that own, that own these entities that are applying for these things directly or indirectly.
Your description doesn't help us, Helmut.
You and me, the general public.
You keep implicating them. It's as if you and I, we are the tenderpreneurs out there.
How I wish. Would be there defining an invoice.
Yeah.
But commercial break.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being...
nations that all finance ministers have tried to achieve. The downside is, Helmut, there's just an unfortunate thing is that there's nothing you can do if Christianity didn't do its job. What do I mean by that? Well... Please. If since Namibia is predominantly Christian, if people don't teach their children about the values of not stealing,
mm-hmm.
you know, then probably people would walk around with an altruistic, improved image of themselves of saying, you know what, I'm not someone that wants to steal.
No, I think one of the biggest threat to society are uncles. Uncles can be maniacs.
What do you mean, Elmo? My uncles are not maniacs.
No, because I know what I do with my kids. With my sister's kids, I just take them out there and do some of them. You know, we are just going to go on a ride. They're kind of, you know, well, they come back throwing up because they were rotating at a very high speed.
Give them vertigo, Elmo.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. Look. One thing. One thing I like about kids, which we all like.
Vertical.
so they really like when you start doing dumb things.
Yeah, they like it. We all did it as dumb. You know, okay. I'm not saying that we were dumb. We did dumb things.
Notice I didn't say illegal or immoral. I said dumb. There's a big difference.
Yeah. You know, even the police officer would laugh at you.
Even the police officer would laugh at you.
I didn't think of that.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for the demonstration.
Yeah, you just, never held a kid and then you toss them in the air and, you know, they're just there laughing, but the mother wants to kill you.
No, I've never done that.
So it's just me, okay.
Okay.
Where were you again?
I know, all the fathers do that. All the fathers do that with the kids.
I know why the babysitter industry is dominated by women. So we make terrible babysitters.
The reason why I tapped into people rather having a look at, their kids and trying to instill, you know, moral values into them is because.
Charity begins at home?
No, not the charity. It's the art of, you know, the kind of discipline, the kind of society you want to see. I mean, Helmut, if we had to do a litmus test right now in terms of do Namibians, the average Namibian on the street, do they like corruption? Mm. All of them would say, no, I don't like corruption.
We've been through this with the Afrobarometer report.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. But if you ask, but I'm not on that point of Afrobarometer, but if you ask them, if you were given the opportunity to steal $1 million, many people would say, and you think that no one would be watching, would you still steal it? I bet you now a lot of people above 50% would say definitely.
Absolutely.
If I was hungry, if I had this, if I had that, if, you know, those kinds of explanations would come up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this obviously speaks to one or two things. Obviously that firstly, many of the respondents potentially come from backgrounds where they did not have access to a lot of things. But then the opportunity is also there. You could have respondents who have had access to many things. And they are still the guys chopping. I mean, they're not chopping. They're literally there cutting the fat from the bone.
Uh-huh.
So then you still sit with a question of this particular philosophic question of, so in essence, then where does corruption pop up from?
That philosophical / psychological point of view is an interesting one, because I think, you know, that's the reason why I think we keep, you know, we basically invented the whole regulation, so more like the we have rules in society.
I mean, when they were
because
kings,
the biggest person kings, we don't trust is us.
When they were kings, ne?
Yeah.
If you as a nobleman, Helmut, you didn't pay over your tax, that king shows rocks up with his squad. And his squad is not five guys. He shows up with his army and says, hello, Dwight. So I heard you planted 100 hectares of maize and you only sent me 5 hectares worth of maize. Maize harvest. Where's the rest?
Yeah.
In feudalism, you had the worst format of regulation.
Yeah.
The king shows up.
Yeah.
Homeboy shows up, rocks up. He'll still come and eat your lunch that you're putting out for him, your best lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll still ask you, thank you for the nice lunch.
Thank you for the lunch.
But where is the other money. Portion of what you were supposed to pay? Your reports don't seem to correlate with the lovely reality I see in front of me. and the nice fat plate I just ate.
Delicious food. Nice farm.
Nice farm.
But.
So, I understand why, you know, the French did what they did. But the French just reinventing the wheel of democracy for us is literally not what probably what humanity wanted to see. Because now we have to work through systems.
Yeah.
Now the system sits there and either if you're in South Africa, the system can be, you know, infiltrated from the inside, from its, you know, its potential heart.
Yeah, I think when you reach the level of what's going on in South Africa, you know, it's as it's been alleged at this point. I don't think that's corruption anymore. That's just organized crime.
No, South Africa is organized crime.
That's just organized crime. Because if you have magistrates and generals involved.
Like I told you yesterday or the other day when I gave you the lowdown of what happened with Kele when he was the chief of police, where he said, a crime boss is my friend. What? Helmut, what? That's the first instance anyone should go. Even if you're the president of the country, you should go like, brah, what did you say?
Like, what the heck did
Why would you open up your mouth and give that comment?
Even the guy he was talking about, I'm sure when he came across the video, what the heck?
You are indicting me, brah. You are not supposed to know me.
So, does this guy not know how?
So, gentlemen. Familiarize yourself with the Public Procurement Act.
It might change, guys.
It might change.
So just to let you know, dear listeners, obviously it's already in the pipeline and it aims to develop, like I said, to Lego the Lego out of Lego,
mm-hmm.
meaning break apart, reattach and break apart again and potentially put in structures wherever. Obviously to try and achieve some sort of streamlining exercise, but this, I still don't see the streamlining.
No, me neither. The streamlining part is on the dispute resolution because I think that's the goal.
But to put up a court, Helmut. Or probably they want like a final, like the entity must have some format of authority that says if this dispute has reached its conclusion, final, sealed, final. Stamped and, you know, and delivered, then the process continues from there on.
I think, look at it from basically the different types of courts that we have. In the labor, we have a labor court that's just dedicated to labor things, but even they couldn't help the overwhelming disputes that are coming, that are just coming out of labor.
Yeah.
And they decided to also to implement other peripheral dispute resolution mechanisms, like you have your conciliations and arbitrations.
Yeah.
So that, this small arguments can just be resolved at
in a conference room there.
Just settle that with a conciliator.
Yeah.
Settle that with an arbitrator. It's only cases that cannot be settled in conciliation and arbitration, then they end up then they are going to end up at a labor court.
Mm.
But a lot of those minor cases are settled on arbitration and conciliation and or arbitration. So that's a little bit of a streamlining. Now, just because if you remove arbitration and conciliation, then everything, including the minute ones, everything goes to the labor court.
Mm.
The whole system would grind to a halt.
It would.
So 9 minutes into business and economic segment. Here is yours truly wishing you a good weekend. Watch out for, interlock specialists driving black or red Demios or, notes. You'll have a good weekend.
And on my side, guys, let's see each other on Sunday, 5 a.m. in the morning. Look forward to my Sunday morning take. I know Helmut will be there later on in the Sunday.
Just one relationship advice, guys.
What?
What?
Relationship advice Friday. On a Friday?
Yeah.
So there are relationships that will be broken up on Sunday.
If she shows up, if you invite her over and she shows up in any of the cars that I just mentioned, Yango or ordinary taxi, wife material, marry her because she really loves you. If she shows up at night, marry her the next day. Have a good weekend.